You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of October 10th, 2017, and episode number 333. I don't know if that's good luck or bad luck. Is all threes good? I don't know. We'll find out, I guess. This is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. It's been a wacky week for me. This is the should have been the third show in a row for me this week. I was on BTE Radio, Beyond the Edge, with host Eric Altman. Awesome, awesome guy, awesome host, awesome researcher, awesome investigator. He's just an awesome guy all around. But his internet is not awesome. And he's had some problems with that off and on. And I was still looking forward to being a guest on the show. But apparently the chicken I sacrificed either had frostbite or something. And it just didn't it didn't work. So I got bumped from that. And last night I was supposed to be the guest on Colin Schneider's Crypto Kid radio show. And we had some awful hiccups here at the WCJV Digital Broadcasting Studios, but it's all behind us. I hope I did catch a chupacabra last night at about 11:58 p.m. under the wire. Got him in a little cage, so everything should be okay. I hope. We'll find out. If not, I'm going to poke him with a stick. Anyway, tonight, this week's news includes a Bigfoot killer arrested. An alligator found in England is just a croc. There's a play on words there, which is called a pun, and you'll find out more about that here in a second. And we're going to talk more Chicago Phantom stories, the Goodyear blimp to cross-country journey. It's going to stir up some trouble, I think. The destruction of the Daring Woods and Cubic sonic attacks now against U.S. citizens. We're also going to have the book of the week. A very good book of the week, I might add. And who knows what else will happen. Maybe the chupacabra will get loose and run around the studio. I don't know. That would be interesting. And this week's episode is brought to you by Chum Bucket Studios. Chum Bucket Studios offers professional, high-quality digital products from prints to movies, printing, signs, videos, video editing, even website graphics, and much, much more. It all begins with a little imagination. Check them out today at chumbucketstudios.com. Chumbucket, C-U-H or C-H-U-M, bucketstudios.com. Check it out today. Well, not right now. Maybe later. Anyway, what is going on other than me being bumped off these shows? Also had a show last week that got canceled, some other issues. So I'm really doing great this week. Some of the stuff will be rescheduled. I'm going to be the guest next Monday night on the Crypto Kid radio show. And hopefully, I had such a good thing going too. I was talking to myself for like 10 minutes, and Colin and producer Cindy was really into what I was saying. But unfortunately, nobody else heard this great thing. I was on a roll. I should have recorded it. It was pretty good. Anyway, let's see. My book is out. You guys know about that, right? Handbook for the Amateur UFO Investigator. I'm going to be talking about this book here in one of the stories. Actually, the cover photo for this book is actually part of a story that I'm going to be talking about. And if you're interested in learning about UFO investigations, Handbook for the Amateur UFO Investigator is a good place to start. Even if you're not into UFOs, you'll probably find this book a little fascinating. Granted, it is geared towards people that believe in UFOs or certain things surrounding UFOs, but you're going to learn a lot as a researcher, a novelist researcher, regardless of what your field is, and learn the truth about ancient aliens and a lot of other things that go into the UFO field. And you could find this book on Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, Amazon.com, and probably a lot of other places as well. And you can go to ParanewsInsider.com, and on the front page there, I talk about my bio and my six books that I've published. You can click on that where it says six books, and it'll take you right to my book page, and you can check that book and all the books that I've published. See the benefits of having your own radio show? You can just plug yourself for a whole hour, and no one's going to say anything. It's fantastic. Anyway, events listing, it's not updated. I've been too lazy today. I'm going to be honest with you. Wow, there's my book in the chat room. Awesome. Events listing, I'm a little bit behind. Let's see. Yeah, I'm behind. I haven't updated it, but never fear. I'll have that updated soon. I just got to cross a couple of these off. I've added one that's actually coming up pretty soon. I don't remember which one, but that's okay. You're out. If you're interested in conferences, conventions, this is a pretty darn list, pretty darn good list. I'm not just bragging because I check out other people's lists. You know, you got to steal shamelessly in this business. And I bring it to you guys, the listeners, because I think these events are very important. Not so much in a discovery way, but people that are interested in the paranormal. And obviously, if you're listening to a paranormal news show, you're either involved in the paranormal in some way. You're a radio broadcaster that's hoping to know some of my stories or the way I do my stuff. Just kidding. I don't care. Or you have a curiosity about these fields and want to know the truth. You want to know what's really going on out there. And if you really want to know what's going on, you got to talk to more people similar to myself, people that actually put on these presentations and talk about things passionately in the ghost world, in the UFO field, and in the cryptozoological arenas. All these things, you can find out so much from these people. And I'm not talking about the para-celebs, the people that are on television. I mean, I'm not saying they don't know what they're talking about, but they're going to talk about what they do on these TV shows. You really want to know what these people are doing in the trenches. So highly recommend checking out the lists here at paranewsinsider.com. And I got it broken down by ghost conferences, UFO conferences, and cryptozoological events as well. So they're kind of separated. And some of these will have more than one. I just put them, lump them into the area where there's a majority of the stuff going on. Because I can tell you, some of these in the ghost list here, I've talked about cryptozoology at. So you may get a wide array of things in these events. So go there, click on the links, check them out. And if there's one in your area, highly recommend getting out there and checking it out. And speaking of paranormal conferences, conventions, again, this is great to have your own show because then you can talk about your own stuff that you're doing for an hour. But I'm posting the Twinsburg Paranormal Conference next year, February 17th, 2018. It's going to be from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., a little later in the day because of potential weather. I get it. And a couple of people have inquired about that, about, hey, you know, that's like winter in Northeast Ohio. I'm like, yeah, really? No way. No clue. I've only lived here for over 40 years. But anyway, I know it's a risk, but where this place is at, where this location is, it's the intersection of two interstates and a state route, and it's on the same road as the police department. So I'm pretty sure that these roads are going to be clear, and we'll see what happens as we get closer to this event. But I'm sure there's going to be a plan in case there's inclement weather. If you're going to get tickets early, don't worry about that. I know I put on there no refunds, but I'm looking at that. I'm considering it in case of severe weather. I may make some calls on that. And I just said it live on the radio, so you can go back and play that and say, hey, you said you would look at that. And I'll look at that. And really haven't had too much time to really dig into the speakers that are present. But tonight, one of the speakers has the book of the week. I'm not going to tell you who until we get closer. But I can tell you that Colin Schneider, the host, I should say, of the Crypto Kid radio show, as heard Monday nights right here on WCJVradio.com, is one of the speakers, as is Audrey Hamilton, who I believe she is live in the chat room, right? Take a bow. There she goes. She is one of the presenters as well. And Brandon Musulo, who I've talked about, Haunted Theories, who he a very good website, very good blog, and a very knowledgeable person, will be speaking. Excited to hear his stuff. And I think a lot of other people will, too. In the ghost field, Ron Murphy, numerous books, numerous, have been talked about here on the Paranormal News Insider as the books of the week. Hopefully I'll have maybe at least one more coming up sometime soon. And some other local people, Scott Sukel. If you've ever been to Mansfield Reformatory, you've probably met Scott Sukel. He is the former ghost hunt manager and lead historian at the Mansfield Reformatory. He's got tons of stories, but the coolest thing about Scott is that he actually started in the same area where I'm at a little bit before I did. And so we met a lot of the same people as we worked our way up through the field. And he puts on a heck of a presentation. He's got a lot of experience in the ghost field. And I think between him and Brandon, it's a great array of knowledge and experience that you're going to be learning about at this event. And we're going to have UFO stuff. Another UFO speaker other than Audrey is Aaron Clark. Aaron Clark is the co-director for the Cleveland Ufology Project. It's one of the oldest UFO research organizations in the world, formed in 1952, I believe. And I'm a member of that organization, and they have monthly meetings on the third Saturday of every month down at the Tri-C, Cleveland Community College. Interesting group of people, very dedicated to UFO research and investigation. Also from Ohio, we're going to have Amy Boo, who is a Bigfoot researcher with the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, which I'm sure you're familiar with. Matt Moneymaker is on the show, Finding Bigfoot. She's not on the show, but she's a very interesting background with researching here in Northeast Ohio, and really excited to have that tie-in here in Ohio with a Bigfoot researcher, because Bigfoot's a big deal in Ohio, and with the Sasquatch Triangle and a number of events in the area down there at the Salt Fork State Park, the lodge down there, really packs it in. And there's like three or four, and they're always packed. So really excited to have somebody who's very knowledgeable in that field speaking as well. And in addition to that, those are the speakers. I'm also going to have a special guest, Greg Faketic, who has been in this area of Twinsburg, Ohio for a long time. I don't think he lives here anymore, but he's been the speaker at the local library for a number of years. When I first moved to the area, they told me, sorry, you can't speak here. We already got somebody, and he's been there for years. Great guy, extremely knowledgeable. His Tri-C Ghost Hunters will be on hand with all of their equipment, and we'll be able to answer a lot of questions about all that stuff. So that's a quick glimpse at the Twinsburg Paranormal Conference coming up February 17, 2018. And you can find more information at twinsburgparanormal.com and get all the ticket information and all the other stuff there. And there you go. Going to be a great show, going to be a great event. And I really worked hard on putting together a nice array of people, a very good mixture of different parts of the fields, and to have at least two speakers in each of the three major fields here and kind of give a diversity as well. So really going to be good, really excited for this. And just as a fan, just to sit there in the crowd, and you notice I'm not on that list. I'm going to be too busy to speak, as much as I really want to get up there and talk about a million things. I'm going to be the MC. I'm going to be hosting this thing, but I'm going to lead the speaking to those guys, and I'm going to be excited to be sitting there and listening, and hopefully I'm not too busy that I can't absorb what all these guys and gals are talking about. So, again, check that out, twinsburgparanormal.com. And, oh, yeah, this is a paranormal news show, so we're going to jump into cryptozoology. And cryptid news. Here's a, I don't know if it's a good story, a bad story. I mean, I never like to see anybody get arrested or anything, but to say this guy didn't have it coming, I don't know. I don't want to be mean about it. But anyway, the story started about 7 years ago, November of 2010. A bear hunter named Justin Smeja purportedly killed an adult Bigfoot along with an adolescent one. The story broke out a year later and became an ongoing soap opera in the cryptozoology field for a number of years, with supposed new information leaking through every now and again. The Sierra Kills event, as it's now known, is highly questioned, and the evidence, which eventually came out as a black bear, was part of the focus by Dr. Brian Sykes that tore the cryptid world apart. Smeja's fame has lived on past his appearance on the $10 million Bigfoot Bounty TV show. Remember that? Flash in the pan. Back in 2014 and through podcast and paranormal convention appearances, despite being more than likely at the root of one of the biggest hoaxes in the last decade. Well, snugly in second place behind the Georgia Bigfoot hoax, I guess. Smeja is now getting a little more attention for his actions in the woods. The 31-year-old Smeja was arrested on September 30th and then released on $20,000 bond. He faces felony charges of perjury and filing a false or forged instrument with the state. He faces misdemeanor accusations involving bear tags, as well as unlawful taking and possession of an animal, according to Nevada County Jail reports. So it wasn't killing a Bigfoot that got him. It was killing bears. And pretty much what he did, I don't think he shot a Bigfoot. Pretty sure those are just bears. And he made the whole thing up. That's just me saying that. So, yeah, that's just my opinion. And I'm sticking to it. Don't kill Bigfoot. I mean, come on now. I know we need to prove this stuff. I'm all for gathering evidence. And I'd love to see a body too. But if it's going to happen, it's going to happen, Harry and the Henderson style. It's going to get hit by a car eventually. All animals do. All wild animals eventually get hit by cars, including people. So let it happen naturally. Maybe he'll die. Maybe he'll say, you know what? I'm tired of all these other guys getting all these commercials and making money on my behalf. Maybe he'll march into the one of the union offices down there in Los Angeles and demand his money from these commercials. I don't know. I thought it was funny. Anyway, I'm going to throw that link in the chat room. And if you're not in the link, you're not in the link. I can tell you that. Only Justin Smeja is in this link. If you're not in the chat room, you're going to miss out on these links. And don't worry about that, though, because during the week, through Facebook and through Twitter, on the Paranews Insider, as it's called, it's condensed for social media. You have to. It's just kind of a, I don't know, thing. So facebook.com/ Paranews Insider and at Paranews Insider on Twitter. You'll be able to get these stories and these links to these stories if you haven't heard them, haven't seen them. And some of the other information I dig up, I also create links for, and I'll be pushing that information out through social media as well as live here in the chat room. So it would behoove of you to be in the chat room. But you don't have to be. Don't worry if you're, driving somewhere. Don't look at your phone. And if you're, doing something more important, can't think of anything off the top of my head that would be. But anyway, if you are doing something more important, I get it. But don't worry. You're going to be able to get all these links and all these other pieces of information. Maybe not some of these pictures, but that's an added bonus for those guys and gals that are in the chat room. Anyway. Here's kind of, I don't know if you call it late breaking story. It kind of happened today, but it happened, in England today. So I guess that's kind of a time difference here. And luckily this one was over before it got a little bit out of hand, which it could have, and it would have. And I know definitely this would have gotten a little bit more crazy, had there not been a solution so quickly. Now this morning, which had been very early in the morning, a video of a crocodile appeared on Twitter. Now, it doesn't seem like that big of a deal unless it's got somebody's leg in its mouth, right? Well, the big issue was, it wasn't really a leg in someone's mouth, it was that the crocodile was seen in the River Thames, which is in England. It goes through London. Not sure if you know, maybe you don't, and I don't want to, I'm just going to say it. I'll just come out and say it. Alligators and crocodiles don't live in the River Thames. They don't live there. They don't live in the United Kingdom at all. So this is a little weird. A bonds specialist, Dr. Chris Davies, took to Twitter early in the morning while walking his dog and filming the head of an alligator slowly moving in Chelsea Harbor, which is situated along the River Thames in the area in southwest London. Now, before I read the story, I kind of went against what I always tell people to do, and I watched the video, which is fine, but then I got sidetracked. I started trying to solve the mystery instead of just reading through the information. I watched the video, and it instantly hit me. I figured it out and tried to look up different things instead of just continuing to read it. And it didn't take me long to figure it out. But luckily, cooler heads prevailed, and this story actually has a happy ending and a logical conclusion, I guess, more importantly. Now, Davies did talk to the local newspaper, the Evening Standard, saying, quote, "It looked like the real deal. I know six pythons had been found in Battersea Park this year, so I thought maybe this was a dumped pet," unquote. However, Harbormaster Colin Bullock quickly rescued the crocodile, which is actually an alligator head, not a crocodile, from the cold waters using a net. And Bullock commented, quote, "It was just a pond ornament. That was it. It was quite obviously a plastic item, and I just got a net," unquote. Yeah, that's all it was, just a pond ornament. And I got a picture here, so whoops, that's the wrong, that's the emoticon button. Let's get the picture button. There it is. So I'll throw this picture here in the chat room. So I wish there's some elevator music I could play in the background here. Dun, 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 dun. Okay, there it is. So here's the images. Let me get the mustache. Boom. You can see the little alligator head there floating. He's on the docks, so he's looking down in the water. You can see, I guess that's part of a boat or something, and he's just filming. And this head kind of was spinning around, and as it spun, it kind of sort of started to bob. And that's when it hit me that this wasn't real. Now, the report in the Evening Standard also said there was a report in 2013 of a crocodile that turned out to be a movie prop from an old James Bond movie. There was also a mystery beast photographed on a rock on the Isle of Dogs that was, in fact, a deceptively tangled piece of rope, which looks pretty cool. And I have a picture of that as well. Pictures of ropes are always fun. Here's a picture of that. Throw that in the chat room so you guys know what I'm talking about here. Well, the mustache didn't work. There it is. So it looks like an alligator from a distance when you're looking at it. It's just on this little chunk of rock, but it's actually just a rope all tied together that just kind of washed up there. And it looks convincing. It does look convincing. Now, Colin Bullock also said there was no reason to panic. We have dolphins and porpoises before, but nothing like this. And again, for me, when I first watched the video, the head was just stationary and stiff. It just didn't look right. And when it began to turn, it was turning with the current. It just kind of spinning. And that's really not how alligators move. And when a couple of small waves interrupted it, you could tell it was just floating by itself on the water. You know, just a chunk, just a head. There was no body attached. You could tell just by the way it was moving. And I've seen these pool ornaments before. And like I said, when I was watching the video, I realized it real quick, paused the video, and I started looking these things up for a match before continuing on with the story where they pretty much told you. So I felt kind of dumb, but, you know, read the story. Always read the whole story before you jump to conclusions. Yeah, good advice. Yeah, I jumped the gun, but at least I was on the right track. And the mystery is solved. There is no crocodile. Well, there was, but it was plastic and fake. So anyway, more information on that story I'll post right here in the chat room for you guys and gals. There you go. Have fun. Chew it up. Well, the chat room's out of control. I see people talking about being drunk. And I don't know what's going on in there. Wow. Anyway, I better focus back on the news. That's why I don't hang out with you guys in the chat room while I'm doing a live show. You guys get out of hand. My goodness, Dita. Jeez. I blame her. Anyway, Chicago Phantom. Yeah, it's in the news once again this week. And the Chicago Phantom case number report is now at 57 sightings. So that means an additional 3 cases have been added since last week. And the first report, which is case number, do the math, take off my shoe, 55 overall, going back to 2011. And this case was added on October 4th and is titled Red-Eyed Winged Goblin Confronts Family in Chicago's Little Village. That just sounds scary. And this appeared on the Phantoms and Monsters website, which is where I get all my information for the Chicago Phantom. If you really want to know what's going on with this, keep your eyes peeled on this website, phantomsandmonsters.com. It's a website hosted by Lon Strickler. He's pretty much the go-to guy with this ongoing Chicago Phantom stories. And the date of this particular individual sighting was September 24th is when it occurred. And it was initially sent into Manuel Navarrete, who operates UFO Clearinghouse. He's kind of the point of contact there in Chicago. And so he has boots on the ground in Chicago and is passing out flyers and hanging up leaflets. That's the first 2 stories I'm going to talk about actually came from these flyers that are posted in restaurants and grocery stores and different places to try to gather more case information about what's going on in the city of Chicago and the outlying areas. And the witnesses were 3 of them, included a mother and her 2 adult children, who were both males. So her sons, I guess you would say, right? Yikes. Yeah. They were walking home from Sunday evening mass when they saw what they described as, quote, a very tall man dressed in black standing out in the middle of the road underneath a streetlight, unquote. Well, so far that sounds like Johnny Cash. Well, they thought this was just a regular person until things got interesting. According to phantomsandmonsters.com, the adult son in his report then said, quote, the man then stretched his arms up above his head and suddenly a pair of very large wings spread out from behind him, which must have been over 10 feet wide and were solid black. Even though this man was standing under a streetlight, there was not a lot of detail to this man. As we walked closer, we noticed that the man turned and walked, more like hopped, toward the sidewalk ahead of us. It was then that it turned toward us and we saw it had a pair of glowing red eyes. My mother uttered the words, Madre de Dios, and crossed herself and then said to us that it looked like a duende, which is the Spanish word for a goblin. We stopped. I stood in front of my mom trying to shield her. The man then made a loud screech that had opened its wings and shot up into the air. You could hear the sound of wings flapping as it rose up in the air and passed over us and out of sight as it continued flying down the street and out of sight, unquote. And if you wonder, Madre de Dios is Mother of God. Mother of God. That's what it translates to. At least that's what I remember from Spanish class. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm pretty sure I'm right on that one. Anyway, weird case. I don't know. It's these things are just, it continues to pour in. I don't know. It's really hard to point in any one direction. And let me throw that link in the chat room real quick. Hopefully I don't hit anybody. You better duck, Dita. Here it comes. I don't know. It's quite the odd flurry of cases that's just piled in. I mean, 57, really 54 cases thus far this year. And I want to remind you that you're tuned in to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And we're in Chicago talking about the Chicago Phantom. But first, I want to mention, in case you you missed it, well, there wasn't really much of a show last night. But I'll be back on the CryptoKid radio show next Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. And we're going to be stirring the pot, talking about how we can improve the cryptid field. That I'm not walking the tightrope on that. I'm going to be real about that. So if you want to hear the dirt, you can grab a shovel and help me dig, because we're gonna unveil it all. We're talking no holds barred, nothing held back. We're going to talk about all kinds of stuff. Yeah, it's all going to be uncovered. And tomorrow night, Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, Hot Rod Paranormal Radio with host John Helia. And he's going to have, let's see, Matt Bell, the general manager of the Lemp Mansion in, I believe it's in Missouri, if I'm correct. I think I'm correct. I'm always correct. Well, sometimes. That'll be a good show. Hopefully, well, no, I got the Indians game tomorrow. I don't know. We'll see. If they're getting blown out, I'll listen. But no promises that I'll be there live, but I will listen one way or the other. And you should too. It's a good show. Great host. Where was I? Chicago. Thank you. The latest case. I think I missed one. Yeah, I did miss one. Okay. Case number 56 of the Chicago Phantom. This has got the headline, Sixth Chicago Phantom Sighting Reported in Little Village Neighborhood. And this is, again, on the Phantoms and Monsters website. The report was uploaded on Friday, October 6th, and actually occurred on October 4th. The witness stated that she and her husband witnessed a flying creature that seemed to be about 6 feet tall with a 10-foot-wide wingspan. The wings appeared to be that of a bat, and they heard a screaming sound coming from it as it flew over. The witnesses saw a flyer in the restaurant the following day, which was how they contacted the UFO clearinghouse, which I've already mentioned. And so let me get that report. Guys, you want it. And if you want these reports, all you got to do is if you go to phantomsandmonsters.com. But the way I like it is I look at the Google map that's out there. And if you've not seen this Google map, continuously, Lon Strickler will update this as he gets this case information. And it puts it all on a map for you. And it lists the sightings. And as you click on the sightings, they're on the left-hand side. You can read the witness statement. And then if you go down to the bottom, you click on it, it takes you to a page that has a lot of other work that he's put into these cases, including photographs and maps, street maps and different things. So you get a better idea of what the witnesses saw, which I think is truly fascinating to put all that information in there. It's a lot of work, I guarantee you. It takes a lot of time to put all that stuff together. And he's also following up with these witnesses and, again, putting on a lot of work behind the scenes. And the latest case, number 54 sightings, 57. No, I said 57. 57. Got to update it down here. Yeah. Too many notes. If I don't keep up with it, I fall behind, of course. The latest case on the ongoing strings of sightings. This one was published on October 8th of an event that occurred at around 10:15 to 10:20 p.m. Central Time the previous night. The witness claimed to have seen a large object flying in the sky that appeared to be a dark gray and flapping its wings at times. Now, the witness said it glided more than it flapped its wings and that he was able to rule out that it was a bird. Interesting. You know, when I've had a lot of people have asked me, what do you think this is? I really don't know. I think this could be a lot of things. Mass hysteria, maybe. A hoax, maybe. An awful elaborate hoax, if it is, would have a lot of people involved. And I don't know. I just think it's just too much. It's a little overwhelming to be a hoax at this point. But is it truly a large humanoid bat? I don't know. Of all the explanations, I honestly have a hard time believing that a large humanoid bat is to blame. I think that's a lot of other things. I have to be honest. But I don't know. I don't have the answer. I'm just saying what my gut says. And the reason I say that is bats don't grow that big, first of all. So it's not a normal – it's not a fruit bat that's flying around Chicago. They don't grow that big, and they don't look like that. They do have red eyes, I think, at times. I believe. Am I saying too much? I'm not sure. I shouldn't have said that. I don't know. Fruit bats are often mistaken for ginormous creatures. And a lot of this is due to the pictures that you see. It's called forced perspective. And you see these bats are in front of the people that are behind it. And it makes them look a lot bigger. Granted, they are huge, but they're not 6 foot tall. And they don't have 10-foot wingspans. And we don't have anything here in North America that can grow that big. I mean, some people have suggested that these are potentially great blue heron that are being misinterpreted. I know I've seen plenty of these. They're my favorite bird when I'm kayaking, at least. Well, I don't know. Maybe bald eagles are. But anyway, I've seen my fair share of these, and I don't know how somebody would mistake a great blue heron for a flying person. But I suppose maybe at one point, maybe one of these cases went down that path. But I don't know. As a whole, as a collective, I'm stumped. I mean, biologically, a person can't mate with a bat. Please don't try this at home. I'm pretty sure it's not possible. I'm not willing to try it, and I hope no one else is. But yeah, I'm pretty sure biologically impossible and physically impossible for a person to just put on wings and start flapping and sitting on street lamps or flying around the city of Chicago. So those things are kind of out. A wingsuit, people have suggested that since day one. I'm pretty sure that that's not the explanation. I think some of these sightings would have been pretty much impossible for that to be the explanation. It's not a parachuter. I don't know. It could go in any direction. And it's frustrating because you would think with so many sightings, so many witnesses, the potential for actual physical evidence should be overwhelming. But it's a flying creature. I mean, unless it poops on somebody's car, we might not get that physical stuff that we need. Or somebody attacks it with a baseball bat, which is not out of the question in Chicago, especially if the Cubs make the World Series again this year. I don't know. We'll just have to keep reporting these stories, and maybe the answer will present itself. Maybe one of these days I'm just going to have to drive up there myself with a big ginormous net and try to catch it myself. I don't know. UFO news. Now, I'm generally not proactive about these stories. And before I get ahead of myself, I'll throw that last link here in the boom. There it is. And in case you missed it, I will throw the Google link in there. I try to remember to put that in there when I do my stories during the week, to put that map in there in case you don't have access to that, or you forgot about it or whatever. There it is. There you go. You're welcome. And UFO news. I'm not normally proactive about the news. I usually report things after they happen and tend to explain these stories, especially if they're spreading misinformation or they're hoaxes in the making. However, there comes a story like this one that I feel might lead to some potential misidentifications. And before I get too carried away in the story, I want to mention that I live in Northeast Ohio. I grew up in Northeast Ohio, and we're home of the Goodyear blimp, and it's based out of Akron for Goodyear. We also have Firestone in the area, but Goodyear, you know, the blimp flies around a lot. It's been stationed at Akron for a very long time. I also used to live near the Lost Nation Municipal Airport that also had frequent visits by the old gray and black one. I don't know if you remember the old gray and black Goodyear blimps. They're all gray, blue, and yellow nowadays. Last year, let's see, July, I was kayaking at Wingfoot Lake. Now, Wingfoot Lake is a lake that's right next to the large warehouse where they actually build these semi-rigid blimps, or semi-rigid dirigibles, as they're actually technically called, and was home to Wingfoot 1 last year, but I didn't see it at all. I think it was off at an event when I was down there kayaking, and so I didn't get to see it. However, on July 12th of 2016, I was at a nearby reservoir kayaking. It was about 3-4 miles away. I looked up and I saw the blimp rise up to the trees, and you can actually kind of hear the engines, and very familiar to me. As soon as I heard it, I knew exactly what it was, even though I could barely see it. I saw it rise and fall behind the trees a number of times over the course of, you know, it was flying around for 10, 15 minutes, gone for another 10, 15 minutes, that it would come back. So I figured it was just taking some short test flights. And during one of these flights, I was taking a number of pictures. And the reasons why, I mean, obviously I love the blimp, I think it's cool. But I wanted to take some pictures in a way to see the blimp as a potential UFO sighting. And it's interesting because one of these pictures ended up being the photo for the front cover of my latest book, Handbook for the Amateur UFO Investigator. So if you see that front cover, which I think was already shared in the chat room once, it looks kind of weird. It's got the, you see water and trees, and there's a little dark spot there. And you're wondering, what is that? UFO. Well, it's a Goodyear blimp. And I do talk about it in the book. I'm not just trying to fool people or anything. I do talk about it because it is one of those potential misidentification things. Now, I ended my day and drove over to Wingfoot Lake, and I got a bunch of close-up pictures of the blimp. It's pretty cool to see that thing. It really wasn't close up. It was across the Wingfoot Lake, but still pretty cool. Anyway, again, technically, it's a semi-rigid airship. Anybody asks you about the Goodyear blimp, you could tell them it's not a blimp. It's a semi-rigid airship. Anyway, Wingfoot 1 was completed in 2014, and a newer Wingfoot 2 was completed in April of last year and is now going to make a cross-country tour to California to its new West Coast home. The 2,600-mile journey will take 3 weeks to complete and will fly over 10 states along the way. And that's where the trouble starts. The blimp journey will include 9 ground vehicles and a crew of 26 people. The blimp will make stops in Indianapolis, Indiana, St. Louis, Missouri, Fayetteville, Arkansas, Lawton, Oklahoma, Lubbock, Texas, Deming, New Mexico, Tucson, Arizona, and Blythe, California, on its way to the West Coast home in Carson, California. So that being said, be warned. If you hear stories of cigar-shaped UFO sightings along this path, over the course of the next 3 weeks, you should have a pretty good idea of what was really sighted. And, you know, it's about perspective. I know I'm pretty familiar with seeing the Goodyear blimp. Like I said, if I hear the engines without even seeing this craft, I can tell you the difference between the airplane and the Goodyear blimp engines. Very familiar with seeing this thing. I've seen it pretty much every year. I'd say pretty much every year. Since growing up, since a kid. I mean, it's around sporting events. We're usually pretty lucky with sports sometimes, except for the Browns. But a lot of these people in these other states, they probably never seen one in the skies, you know, maybe on TV, but it's different when you're seeing it on TV over the Super Bowl. Am I allowed to say Super Bowl? Oh, well, I already did twice. Over sporting events or anything, it's different than when you see it actually live. And it might make for misinterpretations and also fodder for hoaxes as well. And I want to throw a picture in there. Love this guy. Wingfoot 2, where'd he go? There he is. So this is, if you're in the chat room, this gives you a nice little glimpse of Wingfoot 2. That's what they look like nowadays. And just below that is the hangar where they keep Wingfoot 1. Well, I guess just Wingfoot 1 by himself. Now, they build those things in there. They can hold 2. And you can see Wingfoot Lake is right behind there. That's a really beautiful lake for kayaking. Number of great blue heron there, too. Yeah. So, that's your UFO news for this week. Ghost news. Well, ghost hunting. That's a dirty word to a lot of people. A lot of people don't like the word ghost hunting. And ghost hunters, well, they can be just as dirty. The Daring Woods, also known as the Screaming Woods, are located in Kent in the United Kingdom. Daring Woods is a 400-acre area of trees and is about 50 miles southeast of London. The nearby village of Pluckley is said to be very haunted, but the Woods of Daring is said to not only be a very haunted area, but a dangerous one as well. Ghosts are said to throw things, physically attack people, as well as scream in the woods. The Hanging Colonel, the Ghostly Highwayman, the Phantom Monk, the Tudor Lady, the Headless Coachman, the White Lady, the Red Lady, the White Dog, the Watercress Woman, or Gypsy, and the Hanging Schoolmaster are just some of the names of the at least 40 ghosts that purportedly are said to have been seen in the woods or the nearby village. Daring Woods has been featured on numerous ghost television shows in the United Kingdom, which is where our story actually gets scary. The Woodland Trust is a United Kingdom-based nonprofit organization that helps to preserve ancient forests. The Woodland Trust also has to hire security guards to watch over the Dering Woods to help protect it from, yes, ghost hunters. The trust has had to spend over $50,000 just to keep the woods clean and clear of debris left behind by curiosity seekers who set up camp during the night and then leave behind much of their gear and trash the next day. The Woodlands Trust site manager Clive Stewart said, quote, "The damage being caused by these overnight visits is unsustainable. We have to employ security guards to evict people from the wood after dark, and then we have to break up camps and deal with the damage caused by fires or vandalism. As a charity, we rely on donations. We shouldn't have to dig into our much-needed funds to patrol the woods and clean up the mess left behind by irresponsible visitors." Unquote. Yes, I totally agree. We have our issues here in the United States with vandalism. Headstones being knocked over, trespassing. We've heard stories. I've talked about stories about churches being burned down and houses being burned down. Historical locations, being just destroyed by people with, the intent of just scaring themselves. And it's irresponsible. And this area, I mean, we don't have anything this bad, I don't think, in the United States where people are looking like they just attended a concert overnight and leaving camp chairs. I mean, the pictures are just ridiculous. Garbage and debris and all sorts of stuff just laying all over the place. And with the story, while much of the damage happens around the Halloween season, which is obviously in full swing right now, the effects of the disturbance of the wildlife and plant life continues all year round. And trampled flowers, bushes, fires, and a lot of other ecological damage are joined by graffiti that tags much of the Dering Woods, signing that must constantly be cleaned and or replaced. It's horrible. And in this area, there's not a whole lot of woods area. There's a lot of farms. There's a lot of farms and even more farms. So there's not a whole lot of tree area. So it's rather unfortunate that this small location, this ecological area is unfortunately constantly disturbed and trampled. It's just horrible to think about it. Mr. Stewart contends that the screams heard in the dark of the night, are they ghosts? Well, he doesn't think so. He pretty much in no uncertain terms thinks that they're nothing more than horny fox. That's fox, F-O-X. Yeah, horny fox in the woods. Yep. And I would probably agree with that. If you've never heard of fox, a horny fox, for that matter, in the woods, probably scare you pretty much half to death. And I'm sure a lot of city dwellers have never really heard that from London. That brings me to the book of the week. Great book of the week this week. And I'm going to spoil it in the chat room. You guys are going to get first glimpse. Glimpse? Glamps? Is that the past tense? Glamps? Of this, the cover of this book. And there's the Amazon link to the book, and I'll give it the cover of the book. Pretty cool looking. And I was rather fortunate to it's not the book of the week because of this, but I was rather fortunate. I got a sneak peek of this book well before it was published, and I got to sit down with the author of this book and talked about it. Some of the stuff, and this person asked me some questions, which I was really grateful for him to take time to want to ask me and get my input on it, because, I mean, who am I compared to this guy? But a fascinating book, and I liked his ideas, and I liked where he was going with this when I first read it. And I guess it's a lot different when you actually have a book in your hand and you actually get to read through this. This is an incredible book, and that's – I'm not just saying that because, again, I got to preview this book, or he's notated that, that he thanks me in the book. But because this is a wonderful book, and the book is called The Ghost Studies, New Perspectives on the Origins of Paranormal Experiences by Brandon Masullo. And this, let me tell you, now, 2012, pretty much, I got away from my paranormal group. It was just too much to really continue to run all the time. Internal politics, having to focus on cases, having to focus on all these other things, and trying to do a radio show and all these other things I was doing. I just kind of just wanted to be on my own, and I was tired of a lot of the stuff that was going on internally in the ghost group. And so I pulled the plug and spent a lot of time just kind of introspectively looking at what I was doing as a ghost researcher. And I realized that I went wrong somewhere along the way with my methodology. My aim towards helping the client kind of got derailed. And I just kind of went back to the drawing board. And I thought about a lot of different things. And I thought about, if I'm going to do a team again, if I'm going to come back from the shadows and do this again, I need to change the way I do things. And ultimately, didn't set out to do this, but I came up with what's called the E4 method, which is a new methodology of ghost research and investigation toward a client-based investigation. And I used a lot of different things involved in this to create this methodology. Again, didn't want to reinvent the wheel, but it just kind of happened. And I really, you know, I spent some time talking about this and kind of developing in this, and tried to do this out in the field. And it's really difficult when you don't have a consistent team. So I kind of moved away from it and had a lot of other interests that I've been wanting to do for a number of years, including writing a cryptid book, including writing a UFO book. So, you know, time is passing me by now. It's 2017, and really haven't done a whole lot in the ghost field recently. But I'm telling you what, when I heard about this book, when he showed it to me and I got to read through it, I was really excited about this. And it's been a long time since I've been really excited about the ghost field. But this book, this can change a lot of things if people give it the time. And I put a quote on the website when this, I think even before, well, I had already gotten the books in my hand, a book in my hand, and started reading it. This is going to change a lot. And he asks you in the beginning of this book to pretty much throw your stereotypes and conceptions about ghosts out the window. That's a direct quote. He says, pretend that you've never read a book about ghost stories, watched a ghosty movie or ghost hunting TV series, and start with an open mind. And it is because if you start to read this and you try to fight back, it's easy always to dismiss something or fight back. But if you read this whole book from cover to cover, you will put it down, and I guarantee you, you're going to say, wow. You'll say wow about something. And, my favorite quote in this is a paragraph right below that. It says, through numerous cases of reported ghostly experiences, you're going to be presented with concepts that will change your beliefs about ghosts forever. And for me, I've already heard a lot of this stuff through working with Brandon over the years, reading his work that he's done. His background is immense, and I'll talk about that here in a second. But it's still, to see it all put together, it changes everything. And it's again, for me, I've really kind of read all this stuff already, but to see it all put together, my goodness, this really makes a lot of sense. And it's really, I mean, I don't even know what to say about it. It's really good. And if you're a ghost researcher, ghost investigator, whether you have a passing fancy, you're a weekend thrill seeker, or you're serious about this, you call yourself a scientific-based group, you're definitely going to want to get this book. Don't worry about how much it costs. Just buy the book. I'm telling you, this will change everything that you think about ghosts. And the best thing about this is that he talks about his research and his work. We'll talk about that real quick. Brandon, he's a clinical therapist, and he's actually a parapsychologist residing in Northeast Ohio. He has a graduate degree in clinical counseling from the University of Toledo and psychological research methods from the University of Edinburgh in Scotland, UK. Now, his research time at the University of Edinburgh centered on neurobiology correlates of the ghostly encounters, and he studied with the Koestler Parapsychology Unit at the University of Edinburgh under the supervision of author and international lecturer Dr. Carolyn Watt. And Brandon has been fascinated by the paranormal phenomena for 20 years and has been a participant and featured speaker in a number of paranormal forums and events, including the Parapsychological Association's 60th anniversary celebration. And this guy, his work has been cited in a lot of parapsychology journals, newspaper articles, and a lot of books. And I know I have his paper on electromagnetic hypersensitivity. Read it all the time. I totally agree with his stuff. I mean, he's actually done scientific investigations with into these things and has written research papers. That's something that a lot of people in the ghost field aren't doing. And he's already done that work. So he's putting all the work that he's done in his studies. He had, I can't remember the number, 25. I know he did, there was 25 different studies. He had, I think, 251 people, if I'm just throwing that number off the top of my head. I can't remember, but it's a fascinating study just to read the study alone. But he ties it into his whole kind of theory, I should say hypothesis, about how paranormal experiences happen. And, you know, I've had a lot of conversations about the same topic over the years with people in conferences, in people's backyards, in people's kitchens, at haunted locations. I remember having a 6-hour discussion about the same topic way back in probably 1998 or 1999 in Oklahoma at a haunted hospital. And I missed a convention the next day, but it was a great conversation. And it's these conversations that you don't really always have too much more than your own opinion to back things up. But this book here, facts, information, science, it's all here, and it's going to change the way you feel or the way you think about ghosts. You just have to be willing to listen to this information and take it in and listen to it. It's fascinating stuff. Again, The Ghost Studies by Brandon Masullo, New Perspectives on the Origins of Paranormal Experiences. Probably now one of my top 5 favorite books on ghosts, right behind Lord Auerbach. Don't worry about that. Very good book, and he puts things in a fascinating perspective. So check it out quickly. See, one more story here, and that's about Cuba. I want to talk about that. Mysterious attacks. You've probably seen this in the news. I did talk about this last week here on the Paranormal News Insider. It's been called purported sonic attacks on embassy employees in Havana, Cuba. Well, now they're said to be being reported by tourists. And that changes everything, or does it? According to the State Department, at least 22 U.S. Embassy employees have complained of various injuries purportedly sustained during unknown incidents while in Cuba. Now, it appears that tourists traveling to Cuba are reporting similar symptoms to that of the embassy employees. But again, is it all real? Now, I'm not saying this is a conspiracy of sorts, as this has actually caused some tension between the United States and Cuban government. But as I alluded to the last time I talked about this story, it is possible that this is just mass hysteria. I know that sounds crazy. It's possible that someone has had something happen to them that maybe was accidental, say a malfunctioning piece of surveillance equipment, maybe caused a noise, and maybe the person relayed other symptoms that were not part of the event as related. Well, it's also possible that one or more people just had things happen that are just natural, and then they thought, this was part of something larger, something more sinister. These subsequent claims could more than likely just be part of that hysteria and fear that there really are some sonic attacks taking place. And I feel that this is further justified with what we are now seeing claimed by these tourists. Now, these claims did not surface until a travel warning was made in late September. A State Department official told CBS, quote, "Since we issued the September 29th travel warning, we have received a handful of reports from U.S. citizens who report they experienced similar symptoms following stays in Cuba. We have no way of verifying whether they were harmed by the same attacks targeting official U.S. employees, unquote. Again, I don't discount the claims of ailments. I only doubt their cause, that it's from espionage or deliberate attempts at harming foreign travelers. And just like I said last week as well, some of these claims, they've tried to say that this is this spying on these people. Well, no equipment can do or cause some of these harmful effects as they claim. So who's to know really what's going on out there? But again, I think as scary as it sounds, the most logical explanation is nothing more than mass hysteria. Yeah, I don't know. But I'm sure that story is going to continue. And there was also something today about that, about I think the U.S. is booting people out of the United States now, the Cuban consulate people. But I don't know. This story is going to continue to unfold. And a lot of people are saying this is in the hands of Cuban officials. They need to solve what's going on. But I really honestly don't think that they'll ever find a cause for this. Really don't. I just think it's it is what it is. And maybe I'll have to take a cruise to Cuba and kind of poke around and see if I get a headache. I don't know. I think there's really not that much to that, to be honest with you. But we shall see. As they say, some of these stories continue to develop. And if they do, I try to keep track of them. And I'll keep bringing you that information right here every Tuesday night on the Paranormal News Insider. And for that, my goodness, an hour's gone by. And as far as I know, everything has gone well. You guys still hear me in the chat room? Is everything still good? Give me a thumbs up. No thumbs up. Okay, good. Okay, thank goodness. We actually made an hour with no problems. I feel like I accomplished something tonight, like it ran a marathon or something. I don't know. Anyway, big thanks to everybody there in the chat room. Paul, Dita especially. I see you. I think she's in Cuba. Audrey for tuning in, and everyone else that tuned in tonight live, either in the chat room or otherwise, and especially to you guys. I'm not singling you or saying that you're not as good as these other guys. But if you're listening to this on a podcast, which means it's recorded, I also appreciate it. And I know we don't always have the time to listen live. I know I don't to a lot of shows, but I really appreciate your listening in and supporting the show. I really do honestly appreciate that. Big thanks to Cindy, my producer, for all the headaches she's had this week so far. And everyone else out there, thank you again. Yeah, that's it. I'll see you next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.